Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow.
Indeed, today is the day. If you are just joining us, this is hour two of Mornings with Carmen. Today is Tuesday, April the 16th, 2019. We've got a full agenda planned. If you missed my opening commentary on the fire at Notre Dame Cathedral, I'd encourage you to grab the podcast from hour one. It will be posted pretty shortly at myfaithradio.com. I say shortly because that gives Paul Perreault a couple of hours to do it.
I appreciate that.
It's good, man. I appreciate you. Up first this morning, though, we've got Nicole Phillips. And I just want to say, is it okay for Paul if I just say, Nicole J. Phillips, come on down.
You can do that.
That's what I want to do. That's totally what I want to do. Nicole, why am I saying that this morning?
Well, because this last Friday, I may or may not have been on The Price is Right, and I may or may not have gotten to called to come on down, and then they said the best words ever, a new car.
You got to say it right. A new car! Come on, come on.
Yeah, you're right, you're right. You guys have already been up longer than I have. I'm still catching up.
We're glad you're here. Nicole, what happened? Yeah, because I love the way that you share this, and where can folks find the story if they want to? I mean, I know that I found it on your Facebook page. Is that your preferred place for people to go?
Yeah, probably on Facebook, Nicole J. Phillips. It's there. It's also on YouTube, but finding it on YouTube is a little tricky because you have to know the date and the name of the game.
Yeah, no, just go to Facebook and go to Nicole J. Phillips, and you can actually see the video, which is so great. But just tell people what happened. Particularly, I love the story about the woman who sat behind you.
Yeah, so it was interesting because I went into the studio. I was so – people said, were you really that excited? Yes. Yes, I was really that excited. This is an iconic show for me that I grew up watching on Sick Days. And so I get into the studio, and they place you where they want you to sit. And a man behind me named Gary taps me on the shoulder, and he said, you're going to get called. And I kind of giggled and said, yeah, I'm sure, right? Like, I hope so. That would be fun. And his mom was next to him, and she was probably about 75 years old. And she looked me straight in the eye, and she said, you're going to get called down. And then she said, and I'm very good with numbers. And I'm making a joke of it because it didn't seem real. So I just said, okay, if I get called, I'm looking at you. And sure enough, like that act of kindness, it won me a car, basically, because when I got down to Bitters Row, I looked up at her, and her name is Maria, and Maria told me what to bid on the camera on Bitters Row. And then when I got to the game, I was out of my mind. I couldn't even think. Here I am on national television trying to win a car. And so I just kept looking at Maria, and I had this, like, instant connection with her, and she just kept feeding me numbers, and I just trusted her that she would be eventually giving me the right numbers, and she did.
It's kind of an act of blind faith. It's definitely one of those things where you're relying on, in a sense, a form of revelation versus your own reason, because you're literally like out of your mind.
Absolutely. And okay, so my husband had lost his job. We have one reliable car with two, almost three drivers coming up. And so for us, like, to win a car was a really, really, really big blessing from God, something we didn't pray to win a car. We just prayed that God would help us through and provide a way. And so I really feel like Maria was my special wink from God saying, I got you, kid. Just calm down, walk in blind faith, and it's all going to be okay.
I totally love it. Nicole J. Phillips, thank you for joining us again today. You guys, check her out on Facebook, Nicole J. Phillips. That's where this particular kindness story is posted. We'll be right back. So So Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association joins me again this morning. Dr. Stevens, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Carmen.
So during this Holy Week, one of the things that I would find it valuable to hear from you is from the perspective of a physician, from a doctor's perspective, what happens to Jesus during the scourging and during the walk to the crucifixion, but then also during the crucifixion. Can you give us a physician's perspective on what happens to him?
You know, the interesting thing, Carmen, is they actually put an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association written by a pathologist, a pastor, and a medical illustrator, and really dealt with this in great depth. There's a lot of medical things in the story of the crucifixion. First of all, in Gethsemane, it says Christ bled drops of blood or sweated drops of blood. And is that just a metaphor? No, there's actually hemohydrosis. Under great emotional stress, blood actually goes into the sweat glands and then is sweated out through the skin. You don't lose a lot of blood that way, but it causes the skin to be very fragile and tender, which had impact on what happened to him later. And after the trial, the first thing that happened, he went to Caiaphas' house, and, that was the religious, political Sanhedrin there, and they blindfolded him, spat on him, and beat his face with their fist. And then, of course, when he finally got the sentence, the first thing that happened was the scourging. And that was terrible. The scourging was part of what happened if you were going to be executed to everyone except for women, Roman senators, and soldiers. And they used a short whip called a flagellum and had five or six leather strips on it. And then in that were tied iron balls and sharp pieces of sheep bone. And when they scourged you, they actually took you and put your hands up on a post, stretched your back, stripped you naked, and then they began whipping you, not only in your back, but your buttocks and all the way down to your legs. The iron balls caused terrible bruising, and then the shards actually ripped the flesh and went right down into the muscle, tearing the muscles. In fact, it's described as producing quivering ribbons of bleeding flesh. And what happens is you bleed severely as well as just excruciating pain. It's interesting, that word excruciating, we talk about for the worst kind of pain, that actually means out of the cross. It's talking about what the pain was when you actually were crucified. But what happens with that scourging is you go into circulatory shock. You lose so much blood. And how bad the scourging is really points to how quickly you're going to die on the cross. Because of the fact that you already have lost so much blood. He was then taken to be crucified. He was marched through the street. There would have been a Praetorian Guard with a centurion with it, marching through the street, carrying a sign with his name on it and the fact that what he was being executed for. After they scourged him, they put him in the robe. They put the crown of thorns on his head. And gave him a stave and mocked him. But then they took that rod and hit him about the head. So that happened as well. And then when they took that robe off, of course, some of the blood bleeding stopped. And then you rip off the robe, and that causes the bleeding to happen again. So then you get to the crucifixion. We romanticize the cross, and it means a lot to us because of what God did. But it was a symbol of torture and one of the worst sorts of death that could be had, and the crucifixion was the next thing that followed.
I'm talking with Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. We are discussing the physical death of Jesus. Jesus of Nazareth underwent, the word excruciating is what it is for a reason. Excruciating pain, horrible, ultimately... I'm at a loss for words, so I appreciate that you're not at a loss for words in discussing this. When we arrive at the cross, tell us what happens there to Jesus from a physical, from the perspective of a doctor.
Yeah, he came through the street carrying the cross. Now, we think of that, the whole cross, but it was actually just the cross piece called the patibulum. That thing weighed 75 to 125 pounds. And we know from what the Bible tells us that he fell down, he couldn't carry it. And that shows that the scourging was probably even more severe than the Jewish normal, which was 39 stripes. The Romans didn't have any reluctance to go beyond that. And so he was probably in hypovolemic shock and near collapse, and they had to get Simon of Cyrene to carry his cross. When they got him to the place of crucifixion, and this is just outside the city, we always have this picture of a hill. That's not what happened. It actually was on the main road going out where, and it was often on a lower cross that was shaped like a T. The Latin cross is the one that has the top on it. And so you were very near to the ground. People were looking at you almost in your eye once you were up there. And they laid him down. And then they drove the nails through his wrist. In the Hebrew and the Greek, the hand includes the wrist. You can't actually support a body by putting a nail through the hand. It'll just rip out. But you go right it through the wrist below the bones there, and it goes right through the median nerve. That's the largest nerve going down your arm, and probably severed that and causing excruciating, burning pain every time that was pulled upon, and that was done intentionally. And then they lifted that up, and if it was the T cross, the Ta cross, as they call it, they just laid that on top of the fixed vertical piece called the stipes, which was left there permanently. It was the place of crucifixion. They just left that in the ground, and they lifted him up and put him on that. And then they took his feet and actually laid them over top of each other, and drove a nail through both of them at the same time. And the knees were partially bent and off to the right side. The arms were not stretched out completely either. And the reason for that is that was part of the torture. When that nail went through his foot, it went right through the plantar nerve and causing excruciating pain there. Now, why is this such torture? It's not, you know, you don't die from lack of blood once you're up on the cross, unless it's still bleeding from the back. But what you die, this is slow asphyxiation. If you hang someone, it usually breaks their neck. If you pull them up on a rope, it takes 2 or 3 minutes before they die. When you crucify them, it takes 3 to 6 hours, up to 3 to 6 days to die. And so this is a prolonged form of torture. And every time you try to take a breath, you have to pull yourselves up with your arms and your feet, causing excruciating pain, paresthesias, tingling, sharp pains lancing through your body, your muscles quivering. And every breath is horrific to try to take. You try to breathe with your diaphragm without moving your chest, and you can't get enough air in. And then you try to take another breath, and you have to pull yourself up to do that. And that's the torture part of this that happened. And it was something very, very horrible to go through. Sorry, go ahead, Carmen.
That's okay. Dr. Stevens, you and I have to take a quick break. We will catch our breath because I do think that this is information that for a lot of people is new. They've never thought this deeply about what happened to Jesus from a physical perspective. And so when we come back, let's conclude the conversation about what Jesus experienced physically during the crucifixion. My conversation partner, Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Continuing my conversation this morning with Dr. David Stevens of the Christian Medical and Dental Association, we are looking at the crucifixion of Jesus from a medical perspective. And there is an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association. It's actually from March 21st of 1986. I have tweeted it out. If you follow me on Twitter, I'm at Carmen LaBurge. You can get a link to the article there. Dr. Stevens, let's continue where we left off. So Jesus is now on the cross, having been scourged. He's got deep lacerations, not only through his skin, but into his muscles. He has experienced a lot of blood loss. He is probably in shock. His wrists and feet have now been, or ankles have now been nailed to the cross, and he has now been lifted up in a position which has made it almost impossible to breathe because, as you have described, he is going to have to put pressure on those nails that have been driven through his wrist to physically pull himself up and push himself up on the nails that are through his feet in order that he can get a breath. What is what's happening to him physically at this point?
Well, he is in terrible suffering, and every time he tries to lift himself up, remember the scourging is all down his back, his buttocks, and his legs, so he's scraping this up and down on that wooden cross every time he takes a breath, causing even more pain. And that an exhaustion is beginning to happen. We read that he actually spoke seven times. You'll note from the scripture that that was very short words. It is finished. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Those things were because it was so difficult. You can only speak when you're exhaling, and it was so difficult for him to do that, that the words were very short. People are spitting, making mocking fun of him. Sometimes they threw stones at people on the cross. There were insects, flies, and everything else around the blood and the eyes, the ears, the nose. There's even stories by authors from that time about birds of prey coming down, crows and other things, actually pecking and taking a piece of skin or parts of the body as the person is dying. The soldiers were not allowed to leave until the person was dead. And sometimes they, out of mercy or just got tired of being there, they would get it over with more quickly or end it by breaking the legs. And when they broke the legs, the person died within just 2 or 3 minutes because they couldn't breathe at all. They couldn't push themselves up or pull themselves up with their arms, and their legs were broken. And they didn't do that with Christ. They actually, and the Bible said that wouldn't happen in prophecy. He said he would be pierced, and he was already dead by that time, and they broke the legs of both of the criminals on either side of him, and then they stuck him with a spear, and that was usually done through the right side of the chest, just to the right of the sternum, and we have that from records from that time and also from skeletons that were found. And that would have gone right directly into the heart. And then it said he bled water and blood. And what happens when crucifixion happens is you go into congestive heart failure because of the trauma that's happening. And when that happens, fluid collects around the lung, fluid collects around the heart. And that was what first came out. And then, in all likelihood, the spear went right into his right atrium. That's the filling vessel before the ventricle that squeezes the blood out. And that's where the blood probably came from. He also can get blood around the heart. And what killed him? Well, probably hypovolemic shock. It could have been an arrhythmia. According to the scripture, it happened very quickly. It is finished. And many people think that may have been an arrhythmia where his heart went into an abnormal rhythm called ventral tachycardia, cannot pump blood, and he died from the torture that had taken place. So this is a horrible death. But, you know, we talk about the physical side of it, Carmen, and realize that the spiritual and mental part of it was even worse because he took the sins of the whole world upon him while this was happening, from Stalin to Hitler to Mao to pedophiles to people that sacrificed their babies to Moloch. He took the sin of everyone that had ever lived and everyone who was ever going to live on him. And then he was out of contact with his father, and that's why he said, my God, why has thou forsaken me? And that was more excruciating than anything we can describe physically that happened to him.
Dr. Stevens, thank you so much for helping us understand what happened to Jesus, not only physically but spiritually, and all of it on our behalf. So as we walk in this Holy Week, let us be mindful of the sacrifice made for us. Jesus is fully God and he is fully man, and he fully died, and he really bled, and he genuinely suffered an excruciating death upon the cross for you and for me. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. We'll be right back. So I'm excited to make a turn here in the conversation.
You probably know the name Phil Joel because of the Newsboys and because of his very high profile image in the band known as the Newsboys. Well, Phil is actually a dad, and he and his wife have a real heart for children and how we as Christians are going to like open the gospel in new ways to emerging generations. And he's going to be here next to talk with us about his book. He never really aspired to write a book, but he has, in fact, written a book. It's called Redwoods and Whales, Becoming Who You Are. So that conversation up next here on Mornings with Carmen.
Ever had your boss ask you to come into his office for a chat? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. It's awful. That awkward, intimidating stroll into a threatening setting. You know you're there for one reason, criticism. Yuck. No one likes to hear about failure and letting the boss down. And guess what? It's no different for teens. Parents wonder why kids can't wait to flee the household, to hang out with their friends, or park in front of a computer screen to play video games. Hey, sometimes they're just trying to escape the disapproval they feel from teachers and peers, and parents too. Would your teen see your home as a place of rest or just another source of criticism? It's okay to take a break. Lighten up. Your teen will thank you.
Learn how to get your teen back on track. Get instant access to Mark's free parenting course online at freeparentingcourse.com.
Joining me now is Phil Joel. Here's what he says about himself. I'm a pretty simple guy from a pretty simple country. That would be New Zealand. A husband and a dad trying to trick my kids into thinking I'm a grown-up, which, having met Phil personally, I don't think he's trying very hard. I have 4 chickens, 3 dogs, 2 fantastic kids, 1 ridiculously incredible wife. Having met her, I absolutely can attest that that is true truth. He likes Marmite. We're not going to talk about today because that's just nasty. On toast with burnt edges. I like that. I like to kayak, paint, juice veggies, camp, write songs, not all at once. I've been a touring musician most of my life. You guys have heard of the Newsboys, and you've heard of Phil Joel. He's had the same haircut since he was 17, or rather, he hasn't had a haircut since he was 17. He says, I'm just a guy trying to live a simple life with God at the center. That's about it. I think that about sums me up. Okay, that's that. Good, cool, happy reading, because he's now the author of a book entitled Redwoods and Whales. Phil Joel, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Carmen, good morning. How are
good
you?
Good morning. I'm well. I am well, my friend. How are you?
Great, great. This is so fun. I'm so excited to be talking to you this morning because the book comes out this morning and I couldn't think of anyone more fun to talk to about it than you.
I am so glad. So Redwoods and Whales, it's a provocative title. It's really fun. It invites us to become who we really are. It invites us to take the next right step in the direction of God. It plays off of James 4:8. It plays off of Ephesians 3. It's really, I think, for Finley and Eden. So just you, because I thought I would start with a non-question, because I think that when you pitched this, you probably started with a pitch that was not too well conceived or put together. And so I thought we'd have that kind of conversation today.
Yeah, there was no pitch. There was no pitch. I have no bucket list. Maybe I should, but becoming an author or writing a book was not on my bucket list. This isn't one of those things. And if a book can just kind of happen, this one just happened. It wasn't something I planned to do, and again, it wasn't something I pitched to a publisher. I had an experience in Northern California that I felt like I had to write down. It was such a powerful metaphor, and I wrote it down, and then I kind of kept going. I kept connecting the dots, and before I knew it, I'd written a book and got approached by a publisher, and today the book comes out.
So exciting. Give us the, tell us the metaphor, because obviously redwoods and whales, we can immediately see in our mind's eye. They are large. They are substantial. They're a little weird. tell me why that is about becoming who I really am.
Yeah. Well, I was up in Northern California. I had a couple of days off. The band, we were in between gigs, and I headed up to a place called Bodega Bay, which is where I love it. It's a lot like New Zealand, where I'm from. And I was taking a stroll late at night up on the beach there, about 10:30, and it was dark. And anyway, I'm walking down the beach, and you know, Northern California is pretty gnarly. You know, you've got, you know, trees and rocks everywhere on the beach. And I go to walk around this big pile of rocks, and as I do, I realize this is not rocks. This is a whale. And which I don't know about you, Carmen, but that's not an everyday occurrence for me. But there's this whale on the beach, and obviously it's not meant to be there, and it had died, and something just, you know, caught my heart in this situation. And I don't get sort of upset about, you know, roadkill or that kind of thing, but this was different. You know, this whale at some point had been migrating from Alaska down to Mexico. Something had caught its eye. It had got distracted. It had got away from the place it needed to be. And then it had got disoriented, not sure about where it was going, how to get back on track, ended up on the beach, breathing shallow and dying slowly. And it's a horrible metaphor for how a lot of people, I think, are finding themselves just lost and not even sure about where they're going. And even church kids, church people in general, find themselves getting off course and not sure how to get back. And then the next day I was up in the redwood forests, and you know, that just blew my mind. You know, these beautiful, strong trees just with their roots running deep. And I was, I was driving this little rental car along this road that ran alongside a river, and these trees were drinking deep from this river and providing shade for me. And it was almost like a biblical scene, you know, which where God describes how he wants us to live, which we find in Psalm 1 and also in Jeremiah 17, talking about the man who trusts in the Lord and how his roots will run deep and he will not be afraid when the heat comes. And in the year of drought, he will not be anxious, but rather his leaves will get greener and he'll bear much fruit. And that was the picture that I experienced. And so I wrote that down. And then I just kept writing, and I wanted to write about a few things I feel were pulling people's hearts away from where God would have them. And redwoods and whales is what came about.
Let's take the one sentence that really pierced your heart and see what impact it might have on others. Most men die at 27. We just bury them at 72.
Yeah, I was I went to an early morning Bible study, a men's group. And for me, you know, even this morning, this is early for me because we're touring right now, you know. But back then that was really early because I was in the throes of touring, you know, doing all kinds of stuff with Newsboys and whatnot. And someone invited me to go. And I knew in my heart that I was a little disoriented myself. I didn't know exactly where I was. And even being in the midst of Christendom, of Newsboys, of ministry even, I felt I needed something. And so I went to this Bible study, and that quote was delivered, that most men die at the age of 27 but aren't buried until they're in their 70s, which means, man, we lose it. We lose it in our 70s often. Just like that whale, we get distracted, we get off course, and we don't know what's happening. And I think we can shift that age from 27 to 17 now. You know, things have just escalated and things have kind of blown up in this, you know, high-tech world we live in. Things are fast and kids are getting lost quicker than ever. And so I wrote this book primarily for students, but I'd like to think that everyone can read it. It's a quick read. It's an easy read. I didn't want it to be something that people get bogged down in. I want them to get in there, I want them to turn pages, and I want them to get truth into their hearts quick. So, it's not something that I think is just for students, but I think it's for all of us.
So if you're listening right now and you're saying to yourself, you know what, that's me. I know that's me. I'm like the walking dead, or I'm half asleep. I'm disoriented. I hear people talk about real life. I hear them talk about full life. I know I'm not fully functioning. I know I want a deep breathe deeply. I want an adventurous spirit. I want a purpose-filled life. We're going to continue this conversation with Phil Joel about how you can have that. It's not just a conversation about a book, Redwoods and Whales. It's a conversation about life. And we're going to continue that here in just a moment.
Continuing my conversation with Phil Joel. You know him from Newsboys, Newsboys United. You know him as an artist. I'm hoping also today you come to know him as a brother in Christ who has a real heart for people to live authentically in relationship with the living God, that you would take one step closer to God today, and that in doing that, God would be incredibly faithful to move toward you. And that's exactly what this book is about, Redwoods and Whales, Becoming Who You Are. My favorite page might be the one that is dominated by the word blah, 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 and then what? Blah, 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 blah. What is drowning out God's voice in our lives today, Phil?
What is drowning out God's voice? Honestly, I think it's initially, I mean, there are all kinds of things we can point to that, you know, that are busying us and filling our heads and are creating static in our souls. But I think honestly, a misunderstanding of who God truly is, his character, his nature, if we don't think that this living God that you mentioned earlier on is really good and is really for us, if we don't understand that he really does see us and he gets us, he understands us, and in the midst of all of our weirdness and quirkiness, he even likes us. You know, he really likes us. He loves us. If we don't get that, then we're going to look for that, whether we're conscious of it. We're going to look to be seen. We're going to look to be understood and liked from places that will just not do it for us. You know, and God says, look, come to me. I want you to understand my heartbeat for you. I want you to understand that I get you. I understand. I created you. Unique, fearfully, wonderfully made, fashioned by my hands, and I really, really like what I made. If we don't get that, we are gonna fill ourselves with all kinds of other madness. And once we do get that, we have to be very protective of it. I think we give our hearts to things without even knowing it very easily. We can look at specifics if you want, but that's the core issue. We've got to understand that God sees us, understands us, and loves us. If we don't get that, then we're going to be drifting around lost.
So I love the intentionality with which you approach this conversation. And I think it would surprise people to know that someone with such a very public profile and such a public-facing ministry is not on social media. You are not on social media. I'd love for you to talk about why. And then I'd like for you to share with us, how is it that you maintain a genuine authenticity in your faith, in your marriage, in your family, when the entire world is constantly seeking to have you be about you?
Wow. Yep. You kind of nailed a few things there, even though I know you're asking a question. But you're right. The world does want us. And it's not just people who are want us to be about ourselves, and it's not just people on a platform, people on a stage. The world wants us all to be about ourselves. And there's something in our hearts that cries out and says, look at me, look at me. And, you know, do you get me and do you like me? And that's what social media promises. It says the world, you will be seen and you will be understood, you know, and you hopefully, once you've been seen and understood, people will like you and they will validate you and they will give you a reason for existence. And that's, you know, that sounds kind of lofty, but that's honestly what our little old hearts are asking for when we keep putting ourselves out there on social media. We want to be seen and we want to be accepted and validated. And God says, look, guys, stop scrambling. I can give you everything you need. Stop scrambling around looking for scraps. I'll give you the real meal deal here, you know, if you'll come to me. And honestly, Carmen, that's the bottom line. We need to continue to come to the Lord, get back to the source of life and meet with him, be still with him. And for me and my wife, you mentioned earlier, you know, our practice in life has been over the last 17 years to get up in the morning and you know, get a cup of coffee in the hand and open our hearts, open our Bibles, and spend time with the Lord. Just say, good morning, Lord, here I am. Let's do life together. You know, show me if there are things that I need to uncover, to work on. Show me truth about your heart, about who you are. Are there things that I need to hear from you today that I can apply to my life specifically today? What do I need? You know, give me the bread, give me the manna for what I need this morning. And it's not just getting from the Lord. It's actually about communing, being with him, spending that time. But we busy ourselves with so much stuff. You know, life gets so busy and we scramble around and we fill our heads and our hearts. And the social media thing will fill our heads and our hearts so quickly you won't even believe it. And you talk about a whale getting disoriented and off course. I think we get really full of all kinds of other information and that is kind of useless and will fill our hearts and will make us want to be someone we're not. We'll look at other people and we'll go, wow, I wish I had that life. I wish I had that car. I wish I had that experience. And we'll feel, we won't have hearts of gratitude toward the Lord. We won't have our eyes up looking for what it is that he wants us to walk in and live in, because we're busy looking at everybody else. And so, so the first things first, anyway, getting back to it, Carmen, just being still at the beginning of the day for me in the last 17 years, and being still with the Lord, it's revolutionized my life. It has. And it's something I'm not going to stop doing. And I write in the book about that. And I think that a lot of people would benefit from just saying, okay, I need to slow things down. I need to put everything in life under the microscope, everything in life on trial for its life. If things aren't bringing life to me, if things are causing clutter, I need to push them aside. I need to get rid of them. Like the writer of Hebrews talks about, pushing aside those things that lay hold of us that distract us, and getting rid of the sin that so easily entangles so that we can run the race. If there are things that are holding us back, we just need to be brave enough and courageous enough to go, let's get rid of that. Let's lose that. We don't need that. And so for me, you know what? Social media, I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't want it. I don't need my head and my heart filled with all kinds of information. Even if it's good, even if people are saying good things about me, you know what? I don't need that. I should just be wanting the approval of, oh, there's only a few people, you know, my family, and of course, first and foremost, the Lord. So that's how there's a lot of reasons, you know, Carmen, for the social media thing for me. I just want to honestly put that option on the table for, especially for students. I want them to know, you know, you don't have to do all this stuff. Don't be afraid of missing out on what's going on. Be afraid of missing out on what God wants to do in your life, if you want to be afraid of anything. And be afraid of not hearing from him. Be afraid of causing clutter in your heart, if you want to be afraid of anything. But don't be scared to turn these things off. If these things are choking the life out in your life, you just need to be brave enough to cut these things out of your life. And Jesus was pretty straightforward like that. He said, hey, if something's causing you to sin, you know, because something's causing static between you and God, get rid of it. Get rid of it. Cut it off. So I want to put that option on the table for people, you know, because no one's saying that. Everyone's saying, well, take a break for a while, or, you know, maybe just get some moderation. I'm like, nah, if it's hurting you, get rid of it. It's that simple. It doesn't need to be that much.
Phil, I love our conversations. I'm hoping you will come back and talk about Deliberate Kids. I'm just gonna tell people, check out what Heather and Phil are doing at deliberatekids.com. It's really excellent. Today we're talking about redwoods and whales. Phil's book, which just dropped today, so today's the first day that you can get it. Redwoods and Whales. Congratulations, my friend. We're gonna at some point talk about SNTSL. So that's a little shout out to Heather. All right, Phil, we're gonna leave it right there. Have a great day, my friend.
Thanks, Carmen. Bless you. See you.
Absolutely. All right, we are just about out of time. I know this is a podcast you're gonna want to get. You can go to myfaithradio.com to the Mornings with Carmen page, and you can grab this audio in just a little bit. Thanks to Paul Perot. I want everybody to have a great day, and God bless. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at MyFaithRadio.com.